Welcome to another Carl Unload Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, recently Queen Elizabeth II died, and I'm fairly interested in her connection to sports. I mean, obviously she was a racing lover, but she had a connection with many, many sports, especially here in Australia.
Well, there's a big outpouring of grief around the world, isn't there? And so, yes, she certainly, I always think of her as horse racing, but she's certainly being the head of the state and head of different countries around the world, symbolically at least. She was often invited to open different major sporting events.
Yes, and other sort of events, arts and everything
like that. The other stuff.
She was a patron of the Commonwealth Games, and she actually opened the 2006 Commonwealth Games in Melbourne. Were you there for those?
I was not competing. But I'll tell you what, my wife got very excited one day because in the post we actually got an invite to attend a luncheon with the Queen.
Wow.
As part of the Commonwealth Games. Now, my brother Paul was coaching Brooke Kruger, who became Brooke Billet, and then another hammer thrower. And then due to other work commitments and stuff, I took over coaching her. So I was going to Commonwealth Games because Brooke was in the hammer at the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne. And, of course, Sharon and I both went to lunch with the Queen.
Wow. Tell us about that experience. Did you actually shake hands?
No, it wasn't that sort of – it was a very big – I'm going to try and remember the name of the place, but I can't. It's one of the lovely old buildings in the Botanic Garden in – Melbourne,
of course. Fitzroy Gardens?
Can't remember. I'll get in trouble now for not remembering. But there were a lot of people there. And, of course, you imagine the security. And so all those things, you had to go through security vetting and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, we got dressed up, of course, looked lovely. Sharon looked beautiful. And we went and we sat a long way away from the Queen. But, of course, the royal procession came past and everyone's, oh, there's the Queen. It was before the days that I think maybe you weren't allowed to have your phone. I can't remember, but I can't remember people sort of taking photos and that sort of stuff.
Well, you know, I've got a letter at home that the Queen
wrote, when you turned 100?
That the Queen had written to my grandmother.
For turning 100?
Yes.
I know. That's lovely, isn't it? And think now, I'm going to a 100th birthday party in a few weeks and that gentleman will not get a letter from the Queen. He'll get a letter from the King.
Well, unless it's already done.
It's possible. It'll be interesting. I'll wait and I'll let you know what happens.
Well, I remember at the time Grandma turned 100 in 2005, and to put everything in place, you've got to do it like 12 months out. So, you know, I wrote to the Queen.
You have to ask for it.
Yes, you have to apply.
Really?
You have to apply for it.
I thought you just got it. Like, it was like, you're 100, here you go. Here's your letter. Here's your telegram.
No, someone in the family has to actually apply
for it. Wow, I did not know this.
Yeah, and you get a letter from the Prime Minister. Johnny Howard sent one.
So you're telling me they're not sitting there keeping a record of who turns 100 and then whack, send a card in the post?
No.
Wow.
Doesn't work that way. But there must be hundreds of people turning 100.
And some of them won't get a letter.
Yep, that's correct. I mean, I know of people that turned 100 and they wonder what happened to their letter, but it's a process. It's like a lot of things. You've just got to apply for it. I went through Tony Piccolo initially to find out what the process was, probably a couple of years out, and then once I found out, 12 months out, you said, you know.
Because you get cards from, like Tony sends out cards when you turn 50. No, I never asked for a card, but I got one.
He sent me a letter for my 65th birthday.
Oh, so he keeps the record.
Yeah, but that's localised, isn't it? I mean, the Queen's sort of –
surely, the locals, South Australian government, can keep a record and send it off. I mean, how many people turn 100 on any given day?
Probably – look, you'd be surprised. There'd probably be 100 people every year in South Australia.
Come on, that should be a job for somebody.
Well, I suppose they're cutting back on jobs, so perhaps they did have one and that's got the flick.
Okay, well, I'll remember that if I ever get that to that age. I'll probably forget by then anyway.
Knowing you probably will, but I tell you, it's interesting. I mean, the Queen was the first royal that's a queen or king that came to Australia in 1954. She went to the MCG at the time. It wasn't for sports, though. It was to honour sort of ex-servicemen And there was also a second time there was a children's display on. But she did attend in 1970. She came to the MCG and she saw a game between Fitzroy and Richmond, which Fitzroy won. And it was
Who were they?
They're now the Brisbane Lions.
Oh,
no, it was the first Sunday game for the VFL.
First ever.
First ever. And then, of course.
Only because the Queen was available that day.
I would presume so.
Yeah.
I didn't do any research into why, but I just thought it was interesting.
I'm assuming the no Sunday games would have gone back to because of people going to church?
Yeah.
For religious reasons?
Yeah.
Okay.
In 1977, she attended the final day of the centenary test at the MCG, and we mentioned about the Commonwealth Games in 2006, but she's got such a magnificent sporting record. Obviously, we touched on the racing. One of her favourites was, the Australian trainer, Bart Cummings, was one of her favourites, and she was going to have a horse in one of the Melbourne Cups. I'm not sure if she actually had one of her horses run or not, but I know there was talk of it at one stage. She's just been the magnificent leader, a world leader. And she's opened two Olympic Games in Montreal in 1976 and London in 2012. So she's sort of like got that sporting sort of blood, I suppose. And she also, she's presented Wimbledon trophies to Rod Laver, and she's met the Australian cricketers at Lords. So obviously she's got a soft spot for Australian sports people.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I agree.
And I think that this has got nothing to do with sport, but she likes to breed. She bred corgis too, 14 generations.
Yeah,
from the first dog that she was given as a gift way back in the day. I mean, there's no such thing as corgi racing or anything like that, is there?
No.
You've got such short legs. Imagine them trying to jump over something.
Well, I reckon that she probably had money on which corgi would jump in her lap first.
Well, I was looking at the corgis. I had them on TV, and there's a lady up in Brisbane who was laying claim to the fact that her corgis have a link to the royal corgis. And then I was looking at these dogs thinking, they look like a German Shepherd, but with no legs.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Who do you think opened the 1956 Melbourne Olympics?
Well, it obviously wasn't the Queen.
No.
Was it someone, an Australian head of state?
No, it was the Duke of Edinburgh. It was her husband.
Oh, the Duke of Edinburgh.
Philip. And he also opened the 1962 Empire Games, which was a precursor to Commonwealth Games in Perth in 1962.
Why did he get the kick?
I don't know.
Maybe he enjoyed sport in Australia more.
I tried to sort of get, do further research, and it's a little bit muddled there. But the main thing is I wanted to pay tribute to the Queen, and a lot of it's honouring my grandmother who loved the royal family, and I was brought up with my grandmother loving the royal family. She talked so much about them. So obviously the fact that Queen Elizabeth served for 70 years, it sort of it makes me think of my grandmother. So yeah.
Well, that's lovely, and I would probably guess that the previous generation, like our grandparents, etc., probably had more of an attachment to the royal family than current generations.
Yeah, I mean, we've become much more of a multicultural society.
Princess Di was certainly captured people's imagination, didn't she? I mean, yeah. I don't think it seems she seemed to be, when they were advertising New Idea or whatever, she was on that
front cover
yeah. over, and you've got to feel sorry for that. I think that side of being a royal must be a real royal pain in there because, it's just all this speculation and obviously we now know that her life was sort of under the microscope all the time, which probably led to her death, Princess Di.
Possibly.
Look,
you can probably give our listeners a bit of insight. I mean, me not actually reading magazines like New Idea and that.
No idea.
I had to put that one in there, mate, because you opened the door.
Well, Women's Weekly and Clio and those type of things, I like to read them back in the day because you don't read them anymore because they're all online, aren't they?
Probably. Mm. I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But of course, she died in the 31st of August 1997. I remember I was going with the family. My family was very young at that stage, and it was the day after my birthday. We were going over interviewing. We heard it on the news, and it was an absolute shock. It was one of those one of those moments in time where you hear it and you just can't believe it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And the death of the Queen is a similar thing. It's when these figureheads pass away, like there's this real sense of loss, isn't there, for a lot of people. And so even though on a day-to-day basis you might not think of them or have much attachment in any way, but of course when you hear about that loss, then it sort of hits home with a lot of people.
I think a lot of it's got to do with your connections as well. I mean, I remember as a youngster seeing the Queen sort of going down in the parade down through Elizabeth, and I think I saw her in Gawler one time about 2002 or whenever it was that she was here. You've sort of met the Queen. So it's like if Pope Francis died. Now, in 2016, I was in Rome and I saw him. I took a photo of him. He was only like 15 feet away. So if he died, that would...
You had to kiss his ring?
No.
Don't they do that anymore?
But if he died, it would probably affect me more than any other Pope because I'd actually seen the guy.
Had some connection.
Yeah. And look, you've got a bit of a connection, I believe. Haven't you met Prince Charles and Lady Di?
I did. Back in 1988, they were here for the celebrate the bicentenary, and I was involved in sport, got invited to a dinner, which was at the Festival Theatre, and so yeah, I had dinner with because they sat a long way away, but I was at the same dinner as Prince Charles and Princess Di back then, and it was an interesting night, and. Back then, 1988, I was pretty young. Yeah. And getting dressed up, I didn't really probably own a suit. I probably had to go and hire a suit.
You were 21 or something, weren't you?
Yeah, and I didn't like wearing ties and bow ties and stuff.
So you still don't?
No.
Did you shake hands with Prince
Charles? I did. Prince Charles was very chatty. He came around and chatted to people and had a little chat with him, shook hands and said hello. And, of course, he was asking everyone what they did. And I said, I'm Mohammed Thrower. And he said, oh. King Henry VIII was apparently a hammer thrower.
You know, you're talking about the 1500s.
Yes. Well, I thought, okay, fair enough. I'll take your word for it because it's, your relative. But, and I did look it up. And because, see, the origins of the hammer throw come from, of course, the Highland Games, and they still throw what they call a sledge, which is still a solid hammer, like a sledgehammer. And, of course, then it changed as it became a more of an Olympic sport to what we've got today. So, just before our podcast, I looked up and found a picture of King Henry VIII apparently throwing a sledgehammer.
Well, I just had this vision of him throwing a sledgehammer and then throwing a wife away. Because didn't he have six wives?
Well, he had a few.
Yeah.
And, they didn't end well for a lot of them.
No, some of them got beheaded.
So hopefully that had nothing to do with hammer throwing, because us hammer throwers, we're pacifists and we care about women.
Oh, I've seen you throw the hammer, mate. It's quite violent the way you let it go.
No, but I don't throw any. I can't throw. I can't really do hammer throwing anymore. I've lost my sense of balance.
Well, did you ever have it?
Well, I'm talking about physical balance.
Okay. Now, look, it's, again, sort of just a little tribute to the Queen. It's 70 years. I mean, she's been the Queen my whole life.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
For a lot of people. You know, I'm thinking to myself, in my family, with my parents passed away and everyone older than me passed away except a sister and a cousin, all of us, the Queen was the Queen right through our lifetimes.
Correct. And now here on the news, first time a king has visited somewhere, and you think, well, it has been 70 years. And just to finish, interesting thing I heard, which really thought, wow, this is left field, but the bees, the royal bees, now I didn't even know there were royal bees, had to be told of the Queen's passing. Well, and apparently it's a tradition. And I thought, how... It's been a queen for 70 years. How long can it be? But apparently there's a royal tradition that the beekeeper, the top beekeeper, has to tell the bees of the passing of the king or queen.
So hopefully they didn't tell them at night time. Did they tell them in the morning?
Well, I don't know if it impacts their ability to produce honey, but I thought very interesting traditions out there.
Well, on that note, so ends another Carlin Lay Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.